Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. When last we spoke with JoJo, dear listener, it was more than 5 years ago, and Me Before You had just come out. No thronging crowds at book signings, no billion-dollar movies with Yernez and Gale, no After You, and of course no Still Me, her latest and last, featuring Louisa Clark. Now, of course, she's had three novels on the New York Times bestsellers list, has been translated into scores of languages. I'm amazed that she'll still talk to me, although I was amazed 5 years ago. So for those of you living in some other universe, JoJo has written, in addition to the Louisa trilogy, Paris for One, The Horse Dancer, The Last Letter from Your Lover, One Plus One, and other great books, I think a total of 11 or so. And she's now working on script and screenplays for her new movies based on these titles. And Still Me, Louisa has left Ambulance Sam for the moment, or is it just a moment, and ventured to America, to New York City, and once again as a caretaker of sorts, this time for the Gopniks, and specifically for the super wealthy, super beautiful, super enigmatic Agnes. Nathan got her the job. Along the way, she meets a new guy, Josh, who looks a lot like Will, but doesn't necessarily act like him, and Mrs. DeWitt, and Ashok, and Gary, and a bunch more characters as thoroughly and enjoyably drawn as JoJo has been in her doing so in her other books. I've lived in New York. I still go there 3 or 4 times a year, and I'll tell JoJo the same. After her weeks of research, she seems to know more about the city than I do. In any event, as a conclusion to a remarkable trilogy, Still Me does not disappoint and reminds us of what a wonderful, quirky, and really good woman Louisa Clark is. So with that, welcome, JoJo, and thanks for coming by again to talk with us after all this time.
Well, the new book, as you said, is the last in the trilogy. Having kind of really taken Louisa into quite a dark place with After You, after the events of Me Before You, I really wanted to just bring her up again and really have her kind of punching outwards to see who she was and what she could make of herself within the world. And so hopefully it's a little bit cheerier, but it's also got a lot of challenges. It's about finding your identity and surviving in a strange city and about the choices that women make, really.
Why did you send Lou to New York City? And does New York really suit her?
Well, I wanted her to really be tested, and what city is kind of faster and more exciting and more forbidding and more unforgiving than New York City? It's a city that doesn't have the same sort of cultural and linguistic issues that sending her to somewhere like Tokyo might have done. But at the same time, you know, you can turn up there and still manage to feel like a complete alien, as I have done many times.
Well, it's funny. You know, I've lived in New York. I still go there 3 or 4 times a year. And it's amazing to me how much you learned about the city with just a week or two of research in it.
Oh, thank you. Well, it wasn't just a week or two. I did 2 very specific, purely research trips, but I have been going backwards and forwards from New York for the last 5 years.
That's
so
true.
A lot of that has been absorbed, and I talk to a lot of people. You know, I'm an ex-journalist, so we're pretty efficient at siphoning out information. It is an extraordinary place, and I just thought it would be a really fitting place because it's the kind of place that has so many tribes that it would be interesting to see if Louisa could find hers.
You know, it's funny when you mentioned the spot in Grand Central Station where you can talk at one end of the room, and at the other end of the room the person hears you like you're having a telephone conversation, because
yeah.
I've done that, and I have to confess, I've done it with more than one woman.
No! Oh,
yes.
My gosh,
I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, as you said, you know, you had a nice time.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, well, perhaps there's more than one person who's done the same thing. Who knows?
Well, it's funny because this, more than the previous two books, seems more of a bit of a novel of manners, isn't it? Although, you know, it's set in our times, but kind of harkens back in some ways to the 19th century and Jane Austen or the Brontes. Don't you think?
Well, I'm very flattered to be even remotely in the same breath as Jane Austen. But yes, it's definitely about how we respond to people who perhaps we don't recognize. And It's about an immigrant experience in more than one way, really, because we have a character, Agnes, who Louisa goes to work for, who turns out to be the second wife of Mr. Gopnik, the very wealthy, kind of almost like an American oligarch. And what fascinates me is the way that tribes who are kind of established, like, say, a tribe of American first wives, tend to close ranks if a new wife is suddenly thrust into their midst. And it's not just the wealthy who behave like this. I think you could get the same response in a kind of working man's club in New Jersey. But it's just the way we react to people who we feel very slightly might upset our status quo. And the ways that women can make each other uncomfortable are a bit like a kind of dog whistle. My husband can't hear it. You know, someone will say something to me, and I'll say to him, "Did you just hear that?" And he says, "Oh, she was just being helpful." And I'm like, "Dude, she was not being helpful. That was like a real insult." And I still remember there was one day someone said something to me, and he literally turned around and he went, "I got it. Oh, my gosh, I heard it. She really insulted you."
I know exactly what
so
you mean.
That kind of thing fascinates me.
Well, it's interesting in the book because, you know, you know Louisa, of course, Louis is the center of attention, and the Gopniks also are two interesting and very powerful protagonists. Mm. But then, of course, some of the peripheral characters, as always, you bring them to life. And I know you wrote a story about Mrs. DeWitt before. What made you decide to bring her back in such an important part, especially with regard to clothes? You love clothes.
I did. That's good research. Yeah, a few years ago, I wrote a tiny little short story about a woman who is taken under an old woman's wing at an airport during a delay. And this old woman is no kind of sentimental, sweet old granny. She is a fierce, smoking, whiskey-drinking, tell-it-like-it-is, I don't know, Iris Apfel-type character who just changes this young woman's life in a period of about 6 hours. And I love those women. I slightly aspire to be one of those women later in life. And sometimes you write a short story, and at the end of it, you feel like, darn, I wish I had saved that character for something longer. And so when I started to work out the plot of Still Me, I suddenly realized that I could resurrect Margot, this little old lady from the short story. And I loved writing her. You know, it's the hardest thing for me is creating characters, and every now and then you create somebody who just demands to be heard, and Margot was one of those characters. And I love the fact that essentially, although they don't really get on for a good part of the book, Margot and Louisa have so much in common in terms of how they deal with women's choices, but also to do with an absolute love of wardrobe.
You do have this way, though, even though they don't get along at first. It's kind of like the way Lou didn't get along with Will at first. There's this tension between them, but it's based on a certain kind of likability. And those relationships always seem to me to be kind of the coolest, the best relationships. But
I think so, and I think it's to do with the fact that Louisa is just genuinely a good person and doesn't tend to... She doesn't feel slighted by people in the same way that some people are ready to take offense.
Exactly.
She's the opposite. She very rarely takes offense at anything. She just kind of absorbs it and goes, "Oh, okay, that's your thing, fine." And so nothing that Margot says to her really sticks. You know, it just rolls off her, and I think that's what intrigues Margot in the end. And also the fact that Louisa really helps her in a way that neither of them expected.
It's funny because I was going to mention in my introduction that, you know, I feel the same way as you. Louisa really is just, bottom line, a good person. And you know...
Do you know, someone...
Go ahead.
Someone said to me recently that she's the kind of person we all wish we had as our friend, and I thought that was the nicest description of her because, you know, that's exactly it. She would be loyal and funny, and she, you know, she would be by your side for a very long time. I wish for us all that we have a Louisa.
Yes, I agree totally. And you know, the interesting thing is, since we're talking about Mrs. DeWitt and all that and clothes and Lou, bumblebee tights and all, why don't you tell us a little bit, in the short time we have here, about the kind of overdressed scene at the charity ball where Agnes is actually helped by Lou?
Oh, okay. So that was a lot of fun. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sort of intrigued by this charity circuit where people spend huge amounts on tickets for kind of overpriced dinners and tables, and it's really nothing to do with charity as far as I can see. It's to do with kind of having an amazing social life and seeing and being seen. But Agnes just gets it slightly wrong. You know, it's very easy for a woman to walk into a space and suddenly realize that your wardrobe choices are just a tiny bit off key, and that marks you out as not understanding the rules. There's this whole hidden code that, you know, we're somehow meant to absorb growing up. And she gets stuck in a dress that is very kind of avant-garde. And one of my favorite scenes was Louisa persuading Agnes to kind of own her beauty and stride out into the middle of this women's cloakroom wearing absolutely nothing but some very skimpy underwear while Louise tried to fix her dress. And you can imagine the horror of the various society matrons as this very beautiful kind of Palomino supermodel just comes and sits down in her underwear and smokes a cigarette while waiting for Louisa to sort it out.
Yeah, I like the way you talk about the metaphor of it being a finger and then two fingers.
Oh, yes. It's a giant finger. Yeah, I probably shouldn't explain that in too much detail.
Okay.
You kind of have to read it.
So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you again, especially after 5 years, and it's nice that I've come full circle with you, and I really appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you so much, Sam, and you know, maybe we'll speak again before 5 years.
I hope so. So, you know, continue joining us every week on The Avid Reader. I wish I had more time with JoJo, but you can understand, being as popular as she is, she's on a, you know, an incredible schedule where she has 10-minute interviews after 10-minute interviews, and I had tons more questions. But it's a great book, and it's a great finish for Louisa Clark, who is a great character, and many of you probably have seen the movie of the first book, and she's writing the screenplay for the second book, too. So continue to join us. As I said, our upcoming guests include Zenit Alou, who will share her highly anticipated debut novel, Brass, and Matt Haig will discuss his latest novel, which is How to Stop Time. It's a science fiction book about immortality, and who doesn't want to hear about that? So, as always, you know, I love doing this, and I love having you come here and listening to it. So I'll see you next time on The Avid Reader.